Actually, thank you very much for the introduction. I'm very happy to be invited to present my work in the seminar. So in this talk, I want to show you how the tools from quantum information processing help us to cool quantum systems algorithmically that go beyond conventional cooling techniques. So in general, quantum information processing gives us a very useful mathematical language to describe what is happening in the microscopic level in terms of information and evolution of information. So this information framework allows to gain very useful insights to understand the fundamental quantum physics. And also other thing that is pretty nice is that with new understanding, you also gain new control and you are able to simulate on these microscopic systems. So quantum information processing has allowed us to have a modern landscape of controllable tools in which we are able to prepare and do operations on your system. So we are able to have quantum gates. Also, we are able to simulate a wide variety of interactions. We could make quantum measurements, and also we prepare some states. So here I want to put some emphasis that some states are easy to prepare. For example, very mixed states are easy. But if you want to go in the other direction to have very cold quantum systems, that's a hard task. And that's what I'm going to elaborate a little bit more on that. And not only that, now that we have these tools, it's very nice that now we have powerful resources to keep further exploring the open questions in quantum physics. So for example, in quantum thermodynamics, which is at the heart of my own research, you could use these tools to try to understand some open questions regarding what is the quantum effect on energy and information flows. Or you could also help to characterize what is the emergent behavior that comes from entanglement, and also help to understand how some quantum systems fail to have global thermalization. So this is also known as the many body localizations, among other questions. So if you are able to gain some insights and solve this type of questions, it could also have impact in other fields, for example, in quantum gravity. That could also help to give new insights or ideas to try to predict thermodynamical properties of black holes, for example, similarly for other problems in quantum matter and so on. So for the fields in which you have quantum many body system, it's going to be very useful, the results in quantum thermodynamics. And of particular interest, as I mentioned, the low energy systems are very important to be understood fully. So why we should care about these low energy quantum states? So when you have your system, and if your system is very hot, you will start losing the relevant properties that we want to understand. Namely, you will start losing your entanglement, coherence. So you need to decrease the energy of your system. You could decrease the temperature of the system to have the setting that is very useful for exploration. So you will have the emergence of genuine quantum behavior. And with this, you will be able to have the new insights for the open questions, and in particular for the properties that comes from entanglement. Also, you will be able to study phase transitions, critical behaviors, and it also will have some important applications for technologies. So here I just want to make a parenthesis of why these type of problems are still open. So the full scope of the quantum phenomena is very complex. From one side, theoretically, these type of problems are not possible to be solved efficiently. In particular, for general many body Hamiltonians, is computationally hard. So the evidence that we have about the emergence of properties of entanglement and locality comes in numerically evidence for relatively small systems. And there are only few results that present analytically answers to these questions. And the other side is experimentally. So it's crucial to have cooling techniques, but it's also very difficult when you want to go beyond the limits that we have already with the current technologies. And this last part is also related with the last point that I mentioned here. It's going to be required also for the applications of quantum technologies. So the cooling techniques are required for the preparation of highly pure quantum states. And one of the most promising applications is for the quantum computers. And this is because a quantum computer requires a set of requirements to be functional. One of them is to have a constant supply of highly pure states. So it will require them for the initial state of most of the algorithms. For example, here, this to do this calculation, it would be required to prepare the initial state. And also very important, if you want to implement quantum error correction protocols, again, you will need highly pure auxiliary systems that satisfy the fault tolerant threshold to make your quantum computer working and you could trust in the results. So each different platform have the unique way to prepare the initial state or the pure state. However, all of them in general, when you are in the laboratory, you will not have perfect preparation of states. And indeed, one of the biggest challenges to have a quantum computer is to satisfy the fault tolerant threshold. So the cooling techniques are going to be very useful to help you to purify your systems to satisfy the fault tolerant threshold. So in this sense, what we want to try to understand is how we could help the cooling techniques by using the tools of quantum information processing to go beyond the conventional cooling techniques. So what do I mean by conventional? The conventional cooling is what all of us imagine every time that we say cooling a system. It's a dissipative process in which you are going to take your system and you are going to make physical contact with a heat reservoir that is at low temperature. So then you let the system thermalize. However, this type of coolings are device dependent. So that will depend on how good you are to prepare the low temperature of your environment, or that would depend also on what is the system that you are using. So if you want to go to lower temperatures, it's very difficult to try to change the whole device. For example, to change this machine, the NMR, to have higher magnetic fields is very difficult and very expensive. So it's not very doable. But if you remember, I told you that quantum information processing allows to explain what is happening in terms of processing of information. So why we don't imagine that the environment is doing some computations on your system. So now we have all the tools to reproduce some effects. So the question here is, can we find an algorithmic way in such a way that by processing the information of the system, we are going to reproduce thermodynamic effects at will? So this is the spirit of the talk. So how these tools are going to allow us to have manipulation of entropy. And here entropy is a key concept because entropy is a fundamental concept in information theory, but also has a very physical meaning in thermodynamics. So in one side, we have the tools that will allow to process information in our system. So the question is how we should do that in such a way that we are going to cool the system without depending of the devices that we have. So this is, as I mentioned, the spirit of the talk. So this is the outline. So first I'm going to present the introduction of the algorithmic cooling methods. And then I'm going to mention several of my contributions that are related to the role of correlations in quantum mechanisms. So in two directions. So in one direction is the role that the correlations have for improving cooling limits. I will present some of the contributions. And in the other direction is if we are able to find new quantum properties that are coming from the correlations in your system. Okay, so let's start with the introduction. So we put the question more concretely here. So let's imagine that you have a quantum system. So in this case, it could be a string of qubits. And the question is, how can we cool a set of qubits only using unitary operations? So this is one of the tools that comes from information processing. And also, if you want, we could also take use of the heat reservoir, but we have to imagine that this heat reservoir has a temperature that is not cold enough for our purposes. So what should be the strategy to cool some of the qubits? And to make it a little bit simpler, let's try to cool only one qubit. We are going to call it the target qubit. And here one important rule is that we are not going to take projective measurements. As I mentioned, for the laboratory, these projective measurements are not perfect. And also there are some implementations that they don't even have projective measurements. So we want a technique that is device independent. So just to be sure that everyone is on the same page, I'm going to focus on this target qubit and see what would be for that qubit to be cool in terms of purity, bias, and entropy. So imagine that you have your target qubit. So in general, it's described by a density matrix that is 2 by 2. So when this target qubit has a local thermal state, it means that can be written in this form. So beta is the inverse of the temperature, and H is the Hamiltonian. So without loss of generality, it could be like the sigma set for a single qubit. So for that qubit, when you start decreasing the temperature, the purity of that qubit will start increasing while the entropy decreases. So that's what we're expecting. And this epsilon, you could see it as the bias to be in the ground state. So here you could see that if this epsilon goes to 1, you are increasing the probability of this state to be in the state 0. So that's the ground state of this Hamiltonian. So now let's imagine if we want to cool this target qubit, we are saying that one way to do that is decreasing the entropy of that system equivalently to purify that qubit. So now let's go back to the system. So the first idea was introduced by Schumann and Basirani. So what they propose, and they call it, is a quantum mechanical heat engine. So they took a closed system and they said that by using unitary operations, how can you cool a subsystem? So first here you could notice that global unitary operations will not decrease the entropy of the whole system. However, you could do something a little bit different. You are not decreasing the entropy of the whole system, but you could redistribute how is the entropy within the system. So they use something that is called quantum energy, this is called entropy compression. So you will apply a unitary that will extract entropy from part of the system and will compress it as much as possible on the other side of the system. So this is equivalent to cool down part of the system at the expense of heating up the other side of the system. So this unitary, as you could imagine, depends of the state of the system, the size of the system, and should be optimized in such a way that the entropy of the target qubit, the one that we want to cool down, goes to 0 as much as possible. So here I just want to have like a very simple example. So this is the simplest example of a unitary that compresses entropy. So for the simple example, let's imagine we have 3 qubits. And let's imagine that they are in a product state, each of them with this initial state. All of them has the same bias that is positive and smaller than 1. So we see what is the total state of these 3 qubits. So here I will just write a diagonal of this state. We could think that the simplest way to increase a little bit the probability of the first qubit to be in the ground state is by giving the highest values of these diagonal elements to the first positions. The reason of that is because they correspond to the probability of the first qubit to be in the 0. So here is not that difficult to see that this element is smaller than the one that is below. So it's easy to see that. So if we are able to permute these two probabilities, you are going to increase a little bit the polarization of the first qubit. I mean, the bias to be in the ground state. So this is a very simple step that could be done with this unitary. And what you would obtain is that after doing this simple permutation of the energy levels, effectively you will cool your first qubit to 2/3 of the initial temperature. So that's already an improvement that comes for a very simple unitary. And that also gives us the intuition. Just wanted to give an example. And what will happen to the other 2 qubits is that they are going to be hotter. So in this case, they are having twice the temperature that they had initially. And this is coming just from unitary operations in the system. So what are the limits when you have only unitary dynamics? Well, you will not be able to change the eigenvalues, as I already mentioned. So that will give you the Shannon entropy bound because you are limited to unitary dynamics. So this type of operations are very helpful when the initial purity that you have in your qubit is already somehow cold. But if you start with a system that is highly mixed, the problem is that it will require a lot of resources. So for example, in nuclear magnetic resonance, where they have this very small polarization, the number of qubits would increase like crazy. So we need to have something better. So the idea to improve this first part of the algorithmic cooling techniques was given by Schumann and collaborators. And what they propose is that after having entropy compression, since you already have some of the qubits that are hotter than the initial temperature, you could refresh them with a thermal bath. We see that this thermal bath is not cold enough, but it still is colder than the hot qubits. So they included an extra step. So this step, you will take the hot qubits, let them thermalize with the bath, and then put them back. And it was very interesting that after doing this refreshment of part of the system, you will be able to have a new unitary. So you can go back and you will find a different unitary in general. That unitary will depend on the state of the system, but you could keep iterating these two steps. So the iteration of these two steps is what is called the heat bath algorithmic cooling. And particularly, they call it partner pairing algorithm for the protocol that they propose. And this was introduced in the 2005. And since then, it was an open question. What is the fundamental cooling limit of these methods? So this was a longstanding problem for more than a decade. And the complexity of the question comes from the fact that the unitary needs to be optimized. And also this unitary depends on several things. What's the dimension of your system, the state of the system, and also the initial temperature that you could have in your thermal bath. So my first contribution in the field was to give the answer to this question. So I was able to give the analytical results for the asymptotic limit. So here I'm just going to explain you how it would look like in the limit when you are not going to be able to keep iterating heat bath algorithmic cooling. So in the limit, you will have that all the qubits have a different bias. So all of them will have a different local temperature. And for each of them, this bias could be described with this equation. So here you just replace J with the position that they have in the chain. And you will see that the polarization of the coldest one is being improved doubly exponentially. What I mean that the position is in the exponent of the exponent. So that means that it's going very fast to high polarizations. So that's very promising for improving the cooling. Not only that, so we have the whole state and we show that it's going to be in a product state. So that's also very interesting that the correlations were consumed. So this result is easier to be understood when you think about temperatures. So what this result means is that the coldest temperature that you will have after the protocol will decrease exponentially with the number of qubits that you have in your system. So here n is the number of qubits you have. And the temperature V is the initial one that you have with the technique that you are already having in your reservoir. And something here that I want you to pay attention is that you will have an improvement when you have more than two qubits. If you have only two, you will only have the same temperature of the thermal bath. So you need three qubits or more. And also, if you remember the simplest example, I show you three qubits. The reason of that is because with only two qubits, you will not have any improvement. So I will mention a little bit more of that later. And here, just to visualize how fast the polarization of your qubits increases when you start scaling the system, I want to show a plot of the maximum polarization of your target qubit as a function of the initial polarization that you have in the system for different values of qubits in your string. So you could see how fast you will go to order one when you start increasing the size of your system. And also my result was able to capture what was predicted with numerical simulations. It was something that is called the threshold effect. When your system has like very small initial polarization, it behaves linearly, the improvement with respect to the initial polarization. So you could see here, like actually you could find that with the expression, but also it's very visually easy to see here that the first part looks very linear, but when you go beyond the limit of small initial polarization, it goes very quickly to order one, the polarization that you will have in your qubit. So this was my first contribution. So after having the results, we could have like the natural question of, is this the fundamental Cooley limit of these techniques? And the reason to ask this was because it was widely believed that the protocol that I described was the optimal among all the HIPAA algorithmic cooling methods. Namely, you cannot do it better. So if that would be the case, the cooling limit that I provided could be the fundamental. However, the second contribution in the field was to prove that they are not the fundamental cooling limits. And indeed, we found a way to circumvent the limits that were provided for the previous one. And here, what I mean is the important role of the correlations are going to be helpful to go beyond that limit. So for this result, so for my contribution here, we use something that is called the nuclear Oberhauser effect. So I'm going to explain you what is this. So imagine that you have two spins and you are going to send random pulses in such a way that you will fully mix your second qubit and then let the system thermalize. What they observe with the nuclear Oberhauser effect is that when the system starts thermalizing with the environment, the polarization of the first qubit, the one that you didn't touch, will start increasing. So this is very counterintuitive because what you are doing is giving entropy to the system. And what is happening is that this first qubit will start decreasing the entropy. So how could we reconcile this effect with algorithmic cooling? If you remember, I said with two qubits, the previous methods were not able to have an improvement, but here it seems that something different is happening. So I don't want to go too much into details, but just for curiosity, if people want to know how to explain these type of behaviors, we could go to the Solomon equations. So the Solomon equations tells you how it changed the polarization of your spins with respect to the time, as a function of different rate transitions among the energy levels. So this is a diagram for the relaxation processes. Here the gammas represent the transition rate among the different directions of the energy levels. So if you solve the Solomon equations with the conditions that I describe you, that you will fully randomize one of the spins and then find what would be the steady state, you will find that this effect is obtained when this gamma 2 is, actually it should be the opposite, it's more larger than the other ones. So this is a typo. So when you have this gamma 2 happening much faster in this direction than the other ones, you will be able to reproduce the effect that I described you. So what's the difference with the PPA, or how is that the PPA algorithmic cooling was not able to achieve this cooling? So here the difference is that they had an implicit assumption, and this assumption was that you will individually thermalize your qubits with the thermal vat. So that's equivalent to say that the best use that you could have of your vat is to fully thermalize. So that was implicit assumption. However, in the other type of relaxation, you have cross terms. So here you have thermalization between energy levels that are in a cross way. So this gamma 2 will do a reset or a thermalization between the energy levels 1, 1 and 0, 0. And if the other ones are small enough, you could assume that you only have this rate. So this type of operation cannot be reproduce with a full and individual thermalization. So What I did was taking this type of cooling mechanisms described in the terms of information processing, namely we gave the cross operators and we introduced this new reset step as a new tool for algorithmic cooling. And not only that, so we, after giving this new tool, I presented a new algorithm that is optimized over this new mechanism for cooling and the previous ones. And here you could see how it looks like. So I don't want to go too much on details, but here in this plot, you will see how is the improvement for the different techniques as a function of the initial polarization. So for two qubits, we said that the PPA doesn't have an improvement. The blue one is for the NOE effect. So now by combining this type of mechanism together with the other tools that we have from information processing, we were able to go beyond the NOE effect. And not only that, we also generalize this type of algorithms for general number of qubits. And the final temperature in the cooling limit is given by this expression. So here just to compare, how is this final temperature in comparison with the previous cooling techniques? And here you could see that for large number of qubits from the factors that you have here, what we are doing is decreasing the temperature that was obtained before by a factor of 4. So that's not that hard to see from here. So the importance of this result is that we show that the previous cooling limits were not fundamental. And indeed, we provide a different tool that will allow us to circumvent the limits. And this type of protocols is taking advantage of correlated cross relaxation processes. So that's something new for the field of algorithmic cooling. So we not only integrate this new tool, also we gave the explicit protocols to achieve better coolings. And also something that I want to mention is that this result also inspired other research groups to design new cooling protocols. So the one that I really like is by Alvaro Alhambra et al. So what they did was pushing this idea to the limit, and they found general strategies to engineer the thermalization process in all the different directions. So the one that we were using was in the direction of the 0011. So they were able to put it in the context to generalize in all the possible directions. And they provide a protocol that goes to polarization of order one exponentially fast with a number of rounds. And something that I want to mention about their paper is that they show that the enhancements that we obtain with the new thermalization processes are because they have a non-Markovian dynamics. So here again, we could see that the role of correlations is playing a role. So a non-Markovian dynamics, we could understand it as correlations in time. So you are relating what are the memory effects on enhancing cooling. So that's part of the result that I wanted to talk to here. So for the next part, I wanted to extend.
Can I ask some question?
Yes.
So is this scaling of like, one word, two to the n, and so on, is this something best you can do, or like is there any limit, theoretical bound for this achievable temperature?
You mean in the, if it has been proved experimentally, or
actually, it looks it looks like it's essentially like two to the n factor. So is there any reason for that? And the maybe related question is like, is there any similar result for qubit or qubits?
Actually the result that we have, like the expression that I gave, here I wrote it explicitly for the case of qubits, but in this paper is in general for qubits. So you could imagine that here, instead of having a string of qubits, you will have a system of dimension D. So this expression could be written in terms of the dimension. So it's not only for qubits. So in general, depending what is the dimension of your system, you have this equation as a function of the dimension. So yeah, actually here I just wanted to keep it simple so everyone follows. Oh, yeah, actually, that's a very good point. So it's not only for qubits. So you could replace here for a more general system. And the improvement that you will have all the cooling here, we replace here to the J minus one. So instead of having here this value, you will replace here the dimension of the system that you have here. So if you see here, this 2 to the J minus 1 is the dimension of this part. So in all of these terms here, replace that for the dimension of whatever system you have here. And yeah, actually you can find the demonstration also in the paper that I mentioned. Yeah, actually that's a good question. And yes, and also these expressions are in the paper, also written in general for the dimension of the system that you have. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so for the next part, what we were wondering is that we could also use and take advantage of the pre-existing correlations within the system. So as we already saw, correlations are helping you to improve cooling. So let's think if you already have some correlations in the system, or on the other hand, if these correlations are going to be a problem. So maybe you don't want them because they are going to have some problems to help to actually to go beyond the cooling. And the intuition of this, of why we would expect to have some problems, are for the following. So let's imagine the following scenario, that you have a multipartite quantum system. And let's assume that you have access to the system only locally. For example, let's assume that you only have access to A. What would happen if the ground state of this Hamiltonian that describes the whole system is entangled with respect to these two parts? So the problem comes from the fact that if you only have access to A, how you could drive the whole system to a ground state that requires correlations because it's entangled. So if you only have access to A, you could expect that at some point you will not keep extracting energy from the system because local actions are not creating the correlations required to drive the system to that entangled ground state. So we wanted to fully characterize when you will be in that situation in which you are not able to extract energy because of the correlations, namely because of the entanglement in the ground state of the Hamiltonian. To fully characterize that, we use first the definition, the concrete definition of this type of situation. So it's called strong local passive state. And the definition is that the system is going to be in a strong local passive state with respect to a subsystem. So here, for example, this part, if you don't have any way to extract energy from the system, even though you are using general quantum operations locally in this subsystem. So namely, if you apply any CPTP map and still you are not able to extract anything from the system. So that could be described with this equation here. So when you have that condition, we say that the system is a strong local passive state. And this definition was provided initially by Masahiro Hota, like Frey and people. So actually they were able to give some conditions in which you will have this situation. But what we wanted to have is the full characterization to say exactly when you will be in this state or not, to have the full necessary and sufficient conditions for this type of state. And this is other of the contributions in the field. So by providing the necessary and sufficient conditions when you will have that. So also here you will just describe how we solve it. I will not go too much into details, but I can tell you a little bit of the idea of what happened behind the solution. So these type of problems, you could think as an optimization problem. So now we are thinking what would be the optimal strategy in such a way that the maximum energy that you will extract from A is going to be zero. And you are going to optimize over all possible operations on A in such a way that the maximum energy that you could extract is zero. And one of the solutions that you will have includes doing the identity in that system. So basically, if you do nothing, that would be the best also that you could do. So here the interesting part is that this optimization problem could be connected to the type of questions that the semi-definite programming optimization problem does. So this was also the first time that techniques from semi-definite programming were applied directly to a quantum thermodynamic problem. And also, it's very interesting that it's one of the few results where you have analytical solutions for one of the properties that comes from entanglement. So with this, by solving this, by connecting semi-definite programming, we were able to have a theorem that tells you when your system is going to be in that state or not. And in general, enough for any state and any Hamiltonian. So I'm not writing it here explicitly because it's a little bit abstract and don't want to go to more technical details. But what I want to give you is a little bit of the idea of what would be the meaning of this. So what I want to show you is the corollary that is for thermal state. So the theorem that we have is general enough for any state, but when you have for particular case of thermal state, you will have that if the, okay, the corollary is the following. So you have a Hamiltonian, and if that Hamiltonian has a ground state that is entangled, and in particular max rank entangled with respect to the partition that you did, and if that ground state is not degenerate, so if you have that condition satisfied, tells you that you will have a critical temperature that is larger than zero, in such a way that if the whole system is in a thermal state at a temperature lower than this critical temperature, then your system is going to be in a astronomical passive state. So actually this corollary is in by Frey and the team of Hotte. So they were also providing some of the conditions to have this. But the way to understand this corollary actually is the following. So imagine that you have a system and you are having this subregion. If you satisfy the conditions that I told you, that the ground state of the Hamiltonian of the system is going to be max rank entangled, and also you have that is not degenerate, it tells you that if the system is hot, but is still lower temperature than the critical temperature, you will not be able to extract energy. So if you imagine now that you have a colder system, so this system could be at a temperature that is lower than the temperature of the system, and you try to make contact locally in this subsystem, even though the system is colder, you will not be able to extract energy from the system. And even more, and it's also quite interesting, it could be possible that the hot system is going to extract energy from the cold system because of the property of strong local passivity. So you want the, yeah, actually you want more details about the necessary and sufficient conditions. We have them in this paper. So this was also one of the contributions that we had in the field. So we characterized this property and provide the necessary and sufficient conditions. So with this, we could wonder, is this bad news for local cooling of interacting systems? So this is the last contribution that I want to mention here. And it's about how can we break this strong local passivity to keep cooling. So for this last part, I connected with some ideas that comes from quantum field theory, in particular a protocol that is called quantum energy teleportation, which was introduced by Masahiro Hotte. So this protocol uses local operations and classical communications in such a way that we consume the correlations in the system to activate energy extraction in some parts. So we wanted to use this to break the strong local passivity and also to connect with the energy extraction from system, the previous results that we have, but for more general states in the ones that you are also including correlations. So I'm going to give you what's the steps of this quantum energy teleportation protocol. So imagine that you have your system and you want to extract energy locally from A, but because of strong local passivity, imagine that you are unable to do that. So what this protocol tells you is that first you could go to a distant point, take a measurement, and then send the output to the part where you want to extract energy. And based on the outcome, you will be able to find an operation that will extract the energy from the system. So these are the three steps to break external capacity. And the reason that is called quantum energy teleportation is because the measurement here is giving energy to this subregion, but you could do it in a careful way that you are not going to increase the energy from other parts of the system. So you could do that, for example, with a measurement that has operators that commute with the other interacting terms. So that means that you are not raising the energy here. So namely, the energy that you're extracting here is not because you are giving energy here. It's energy that was already here, but it was locked in the strong local passivity property. So then it means that you are giving energy here that does not travel, but will take information enough to know what to do in the other region. So you are now able to extract energy from this point. That energy was already there, but it was locked. So we wanted to implement this protocol. So indeed, we explore not only for strongly passive states, but in general, when you have Gibbs states. So if your system is in a thermal state, even if it's not in a local passive state, but if you are restricted to local actions, you could also use this technique to improve cooling. So I just wanted to show here an example. So here, these three values gives the purity of one of the qubits before implementing the protocol for this Hamiltonian. So you could see here that when you have higher values for the coupling, the initial purity actually is worse. For example, the larger value will give you a very highly mixed state. After applying the protocol, you will have here in the top what is the final purity after implementing QET. And the interesting part is that the states that initially were the worst after the protocol have the best improvement. And that's because of the correlations. And that's what makes this type of protocols to activate. So because you have more correlations in this type of systems, also the protocol works better. So that's also one of the contributions that we have to combining ideas from quantum field theory to be implemented here. And this is just like mentioning that soon in the archive, we are going to present the first experimental demonstration about this protocols. So in particular, we activated the strong local passivity state using nuclear magnetic resonance experiments. So I will not tell too much about this, but you will have it soon in the archive. So you wanted to conclude here. So the general idea or what you should take home from this talk is that correlations play an important role for improving algorithmic cooling methods. So several of my contributions indeed show that you could circumvent the previous limits when you take correlations in different ways. So one of them could be taking advantage when you have cross-correlated relaxation processes. You could also take advantage of the correlations that exist already in the initial state that are induced by the internal interactions on the system. And also correlations are going to have new properties. So in particular, we fully characterize the strong local passivity. And yeah, so there is still like future directions that I would like to explore. So just to mention a few of them. So what I'm still planning to do is to use the tools from quantum information theory to keep elucidating central questions in quantum thermalization phenomena and information dynamics. So more concretely, what I want to do is to combine the tools that I have already described in the context of resource theory and try to tackle other type of questions. For example, what's the influence of the quantum effects when you have them in the flow and energy information? Also gain new insights to tackle some of the questions regarding the nature of thermalization phenomena and understand the many localization problems. And I'm also interested to start seeing what is the impact of the results and extend the ideas to other fields, as I already mentioned. So yeah, so that could be some of the directions. So it's not the complete list of plants, but somehow gives the taste of what could be the directions I would like to explore. So thank you very much for listening. If you have questions, I would be happy to know your questions.
Okay. Yeah, let's thank the speaker. Right. So thanks for the talk. And now it's time for questions. So if you have questions, I think you can just speak up.
Should I ask my question?
Yeah,
thank you. Actually, it was too fast for me near the end when you mentioned you do the measurement and then you use the outcome of that measurement to, can you give a bit more intuition? How are you using that to cool that system? Just the slide. I didn't quite get the intuition.
Yeah, you're right. I think I should clarify a little bit more here. Yes, because of the measurement that you have here, and because the system has correlations, that means that the information that you are gaining here also contains information about other parts of the system.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So by gaining that information, you also will be able to predict at some extent what would be the best strategy here to be able to extract.
What is the algorithm? What is the, in your spin chain model, what is the precise algorithm to, how do you, because one needs to use that information in a specific way to do extraction. Mm-hmm. What does in practice, what is the algorithm?
Yes, yeah, actually, for that first, you will have to define what going to be the operators for the measurement.
Mm-hmm.
So after that measurement, you will know what is the post state after the measurement. So by using the outcome, what you will have to do is optimize over all possible operations here. So actually this case is restricted to unitaries to make it simpler, but still it managed to activate the state. So what you will have to do is optimize over the possible unitaries that you have here. So at the end, it still is like an optimization problem that will use the information, but it still is not that automatically tells you what you have to do. You have to do an optimization of what unitaries now will be able to extract the energy. So yeah, actually for the particular protocol, yes, first you have to give what are the operators that you need for the measurement that will tell you what will be the post state for the after the measurement, and then do the optimization to know what to do locally on A.
I see. Are there solvable models where you can kind of see some intuitively what this optimization can be done analytically or?
For the activation, let me see.
For this optimization, are there models which one can solve analytically and see this? What is the.
Yes. I don't have the reference here, but let me see if I can show it in the extra slides. Okay. Yeah, I didn't include it in the extra slides, but if you go to this reference, you will find the analytical steps also for the protocol, especially if you go to this paper. So we have the case for the minimal QT. So the minimal is using 2 qubits. So for that one, we tell you what is the operation explicitly, like analytically, that you will need to have to extract the energy from the system. Mm-hmm. There's also another paper from Masahiro Hotan, so they also have the analytical expressions.
I was more wondering about, given some many body systems, some correlate, let's say some.
Actually that's a good question. And that's still one of the open questions when you have like a larger system. So for example, the analytical solutions were for the minimal QT. So the minimal is when you have 2 qubits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's something simple, relatively simple. So you have two qubits, and what you want to do is something like this. But if you have a larger system, I don't think there are papers having the analytical expressions for what would be the strategy for more than two qubits. But sure. Actually, that's a very good question. I think it's still open.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean, like, let's say for free fermion systems, such like very easy systems, like we still don't know how to do quantum energy teleportation in a nice way? Or
we are going to present the first demonstration in mm-hmm. nuclear magnetic resonance. Mm-hmm. So we're going to use this molecule. And before that, I think there were only proposals, but none of them were actually, like, this is going to be the first time that is done in the experiment. Yeah.
I see. That's
mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sorry, I hijacked the question.
Thank you for the question.
Any other question? Yeah, Hilary.
On your protocol a ways back, you have the three steps.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is that the receiving party does some local unitary that's conditioned on the signal from the sender, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At what point does the recipient erase the memory in their control system? Because otherwise, you can only do this once.
Okay. Yeah, actually, this one is going to be these three steps. So this, you will not keep iterating. So this is like once, yeah, as you said, you could do it once you are extracting that energy. And actually, that's the reason that you also need to optimize what is going to be the best operation that will extract it. Because it's like, it will not have many rounds. It's just like, do it once.
I mean, otherwise, if you were going to make it a closed cycle, you would have to include the fourth step, because otherwise it's not a closed thermodynamic cycle.
Yeah. No, actually, this one is just like to activate it and extract. So it's like only, it's not many rounds, it's only one. So that's it. Okay. Yeah, actually, you're right. I should have mentioned that.
There's no kind of asymptotic limit as you do it infinitely many times, because you can only do it once.
Yeah, no, here it's only once. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I should have mentioned that. Yeah. Thank you very much for the question.
Any other question? I have one very naive question. So, let's say, in some sense, if I have some quantum error correcting code with some Hamiltonian, then performing quantum error correction is like cooling, right? Because it will bring my system to the ground state. So I'm just wondering, like, if you want to generalize this thing to many body systems, like, is there any way, like, a quantum idea of quantum error correction may play some role?
You mean like using the protocols that quantum error correction has?
I don't know what's the rule of the game, but I guess mm-hmm. to do the quantum error correction, I need to perform projective measurement. That might be not a good thing, but I'm still wondering, like, sometimes, yeah, quantum error correction helps to improve and then push the bound
mm-hmm.
much. So I'm just wondering, is there any room for such?
Yes, I think, yeah, I understand your point. I think it's like a very interesting question, because for quantum error correction, one of the requirements is that you will start needing auxiliary system. So it depends of what will be for that. But I think it's still, some ideas could be useful. So it would be actually very interesting to explore what would be like the interplay, like, between these techniques, and try to further optimize. But yeah, actually, that will be interesting to see that. But yeah, one of the reasons that I would think is hard because of the faltering threshold that you need for the purity of the Ancilla qubits. But if we could play a little bit around and try to see like the strategy and try to implement it here, I think that could be like very interesting to explore.
And one more thing is maybe it's not very, very relevant to your research, but there is something called like some in studies of black holes and ADS-CFT correspondence and so on. There is some protocol called traversable wormhole, and then yeah, it's just you have two black holes connected by wormhole, and it's usually not traversable, but by doing some version of teleportation, this becomes like you can go through the wormhole. And then I think it's probably lowering the temperature, I think, if I remember correctly. So maybe that kind of thing can be viewed as a energy teleportation. I don't know.
I think that would be something interesting to explore. Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see that. Maybe you could send me some references.
Yeah.
Take a look at that. Yeah, I think that would be very interesting to see and try to see maybe there's some connections with that.
Great. So then I think there's one more question.
Excuse me, I write my question. It is not so exact question. It is elementary in the chat. Please look at the chat.
Oh, okay. Let me see. Oh, yeah. The question is why understanding the quantum behavior in many-body quantum system is difficult?
Yeah. I have a conceptual problem with this.
Okay. Yeah, actually, yes. One of the reasons is that, yeah, when you start scaling the number of particles, the dimension goes exponentially, but not only that, because when you have low temperatures, you will start having also correlations that makes like more complex also to study. So yeah, so that would be like mostly the reason that is not, right now we don't have efficient algorithms to simulate these type of problems in which you will have entanglement among like a large number of systems.
If we increase the number of the particles, then we can understand completely. I mean, it can help that the limited number of particles can be defined exactly.
When you said like increasing, you mean to go to the limit in which you could start using
the number of the particles. For example, if you have 3 particles, 4 particles, 10 particles, and if you increase the number of the particles, you increase the complexity of the system.
We start increasing, actually increase exponentially the complexity, like the dimension, and also it's going to be more complex for all the entanglement that you have in the system. So actually it's very hard questions if you want to tackle them theoretically. And yeah, actually with the current technologies that we have, it's also very difficult. Actually, that was somehow like the reason that Feynman also proposed that if you want to study quantum properties of many body system, you will require a different type of protocols, the ones that have quantum effects. So actually it was somehow like the idea to start thinking about a quantum computer. So to solve them efficiently, what he thinks is that you need to have a device that also behaves like quantum.
For example, in gravity, if you increase the number of the particles to 4, then you cannot solve the equation exactly. Is there the same situation as, for example, in gravity, when you increase the number of the particles to 3 or 4 particles, then you cannot solve the solutions and you have the complex solutions. Is the situation is like that or only from the quantum manner?
I think the discussion is going a bit off topic in my opinion. So I think if you are interested, I think you should ask probably offline. And Brian, online.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for all the questions. I'm very happy to present here in the seminar.
Okay, so if there is no more question, let's thank the speaker again. Thank you for the wonderful talk.
Thank you very much.